Good to see you all. Okay. Well, soon we'll be starting the practice intensive. And we, just a few weeks ago, finished talking about the Jhulmir Samadhi. So I was puzzling, what would be a good thing to talk about for this Wednesday? And the other day, the wind really picked up here at the Blue Mountain Zendo. And I was looking out the window and noticed the branches and the tops of the big evergreens that surround our backyard were kind of whipped back and forth. And we are in Mission, as I think almost everyone here knows, and a bit far away from the coast. So it's not often that we experience windy conditions here. Although it is true, over the past year or so, we've had some really severe windstorms that have brought down really large trees, including one in our backyard. But for some reason, watching these branches sway back and forth, and maybe because it's also Poetry Month, it reminded me of a poem by Dogen Zenji's main Chinese teacher, Rujing Tiantong. And here's the poem. I think all of you know Dogen, so don't need to explain much about him. The poem goes like this. The whole body of the windbell is like a mouth hanging in empty space, without distinguishing the winds from east, west, south, or north, together expressing wisdom equally to all beings. De-ding-dong, de-ding-dong. That's the whole poem. The original, of course, is in Chinese. And there are a number of translations of it done by various translators, including Kaz Tanahashi and people like that. But the poem I just read, the translation I just read, rather, is by Shohaku Okumura, who was Keitsen, my first Soto Zen teacher, when we lived in Japan and we practiced with him for several years. And now, of course, he is well known as a translator and commentary on Dogen studies. He's written a number of books in English, and he's has a center in Bloomington, Indiana. Anyway, I like this poem because it reminds me that the Dharma is heard everywhere, and perhaps most clearly when no words are involved. Winds speaking through trees, the cries of a child, waterfalls, spring frogs, sound of car tires on a rainy night, lawnmowers, flies buzzing against the glass, perhaps the gentle snores of your partner. So often, I get quite excited and caught up in words and sentences as I read about the Dharma, that I forget to listen sometimes to the Dharma of the insentient. And from the very beginning of this tradition, the Zen tradition, Bodhidharma, the legendary founder, or figure rather, who brought this practice from India into China, described the Zen tradition like this: a special transmission outside the scriptures, not depending on words and letters, pointing directly to the mind, seeing into one's true nature, and attaining Buddhahood And so from that time forward, there have been many, many stories cautioning us against the heavy reliance on words and study. Now, I'll just tell you one more story that I really like about this. One of our Chinese ancestors, Tishan, when he lived, who was a very famous Buddhist scholar, he ended up burning all his books. I can't imagine that. I love books. It'd be hard to imagine burning them all. Anyway, one day, the story goes, when he was traveling, he set down his pack full of books to buy some refreshments at a tea stall. Whereupon the old woman, always be careful of old women at tea stalls. An old woman asked what writings he'd been carrying that were clearly so dear to him. "Commentaries on the Diamond Sutra," he responded. "Commentaries to help us understand reality." And he considered these books indispensable, so indispensable that he carried them wherever he went so he could study and write commentaries himself. So the old tea woman nodded and then said, "I don't understand much, but I heard the Diamond Sutra says, past minds cannot be grasped, present mind cannot be grasped, and future mind cannot be grasped. Which mind does this learned monk in front of me desire to refresh?" And Tishan, in all his scholarly learning, was rendered speechless. And according to the story, abandoned his focus on book learning, and he turned to meditation and the practice in the Zen tradition. Now, I must confess to you all that I love books. Lots, and have lots of Buddhist books in my library, in the library that Kate and I have. And books have been Dharma gates for me. But I also must be aware, and I caution myself, at least I try to regularly, to be aware of the Dharma being whispered all around. But clearly, you know, Bodhidharma's admonition that Zen is a transmission beyond words isn't something that we should assume, or rather we shouldn't assume that it means words are tainted or need to be avoided. You know, given the volumes upon volumes of classical Zen literature, and even the Shobo Genzo, Dogen's main collection of writings, is like two large fat volumes translated into English. It seems that our ancestors found much nourishment in writing words. And isn't it true that one nourishment we get is when words resonate really with the heart, with the bones, and call forth what is already there, and in some magical way give it expression? Haven't we all had a kind of experience of a phrase or a poem that unexpectedly touches our inner being, like a warm hand taking our own and opens a Dharma gate? So the windbell poem that I started this talk with is from the Shobo Genzo, the great works of Dogen Zenji's, a collection of essays. And it's in the second chapter, so quite early on in Dogen's writings. And this chapter is called the Makahanya Harimitsu, or the Perfection of Wisdom. And it's a chapter where Dogen really discusses his understanding of the wisdom literature, the prajna literature. And particularly, he talks about the Heart Sutra, which is one that we chant whenever we do a service. Dogen first started to practice the Zen tradition in Japan with a monk named Myozen. And they practiced together at a monastery that's still in Japan, Kenninji, in Kyoto, for about 6 years until Dogen was about 23. And then together, Dogen, together with his teacher Myozan, went to China because they believed they could learn more about, or the more authentic Zen in China at that time. And they went together. And unfortunately, Myozan, Dogen's teacher at the time, died in China at the age of 43. So Dogen was searching for the Dharma in China. And he was almost going to leave, feeling he hadn't really found a really true teacher, when he finally discovered what he calls, or called, his true teacher, Tendo Nyojo, or Tiantong Rujing, as it's in Chinese. Now, not much is known about Rujing. Most of what is known about him actually comes from Dogen's own writings. So he wasn't that famous in China. But clearly Dogen loved and revered this man. So let's go back to the poem again. Dogen introduces the poem by saying, "My late master, the ancient Buddha, said, 'The whole body of the windbell is like a mouth hanging in empty space. Without distinguishing the winds from east, west, south, or north, together expressing wisdom equally to all beings.'" De ding dong, de ding dong. In Japanese, wind bell is hūrin. And nothing highlights summer in Japan better than a hūrin. It's a small bell, usually made of ceramic or glass, right, with a strip of paper, clapper inside, with a strip of paper that hangs down. And usually there's a haiku or some kind of short phrase or poem written on this piece of paper. And as the paper flutters in the wind, the clapper, of course, strikes the inside of the bell, making a ting-ting sound, which is hard to describe in English, but it's very cooling, a kind of a light sound, which is very refreshing in the hot, muggy summer heat of Japan. But I think Rujing's bell, Rujing's wing bell, probably refers to the big metal bells that would hang off, and still hang off, the corners, corner eaves of large temples. And these bells, they hang upside down like open mouths facing downward with a metal disc or a couple of metal discs hanging down, but the inside one acts as a clapper, knocking back and forth, catching the wind, and the wind causing the bell to sound. The whole body of the windbell is like a mouth hanging in empty space. I think this line is like our zazen, our meditation practice. We sit without expectation, without plan, empty, kind of like an open mouth, ready. In Zazen practice, we ready ourselves by stilling the body, calming the heart, reducing distractions. We ready ourselves. But ready to what? To speak, sing, cough, eat, drink, snore? Perhaps none of these, or perhaps all of them. We just sit open, in empty space. We sit open as empty space, open to everything. Empty is actually a Buddhist technical term. That's a translation of the Sanskrit word shunyata. But the word shunyata implies limitlessness, boundlessness, an infinite capacity for response. So if empty, the word empty kind of leaves you a bit cold, you could try boundlessness. We still ourselves and open to boundlessness. Rujing writes, like a mouth, an open mouth. It really must be an open mouth, ready to speak or sing, to call forth, depending on the wind. What comes out of this windbell's mouth? Well, the next line of the poem, without distinguishing the winds from east, west, south, or north. Compared to other places, I don't think we really notice the wind that much here in the Pacific Northwest unless we live near the water or if there's a storm. In Calgary, where I grew up, wind is a more present force. The prairie winds can almost knock you down or move the fields of grain in very memorizing waves. Or those strong winds, if they turn into a tornado, can suck up a mobile home out of the trailer park and deposit it elsewhere. For those raised on the prairies, wind can be a mystical force, especially in childhood. I certainly found it so. W.O. Mitchell's novel, Who Has Seen the Wind? Now that would be a great koan, wouldn't it? Who has seen the wind? Anyway, it's a wonderful tale of a young boy deeply touched by the wind as he learns about life and death. And in Calgary, of course, we have a special wind called the Chinook. It's a warm wind that blows off the Rockies in winter, creating spring-like weather. Some people call it witch's breath. Witch's breath because it brings false hope. Trees can begin to bud, and then suddenly the Chinook leaves and it's minus 10 again, or even minus 20 weather. Within a day, it can suddenly flip. I've heard that the suicide rate goes up after a Chinook. Clearly, plants are not the only beings to grab onto a false hope. East, west, south, north. Very useful notions, of course, to help us navigate the world and share information with each other. The sun rises in the east, sets in the west. Everyone knows this, right? But if you stand on the North Pole or the South Pole, what happens? Does east and west exist, or does it make any sense at that point? What we hold to be so constant and true may not always be so. These winds, which way will they blow in your life? Sometimes we enjoy life, sometimes life is fraught with difficulties. That's just the way it is. A warm breeze, a killing north wind, a new friendship, a car accident. We think we're in control, but our control is very tenuous, or maybe it's even just a delusion. We try to cling to how things should be, and when we do so, we create misery for ourselves and others. Shinryu Suzuki, the Japanese priest who brought Soto Zen from Japan to North America, in the 60s, wrote this. The secret of Soto Zen, and that's the kind of Zen we're practicing, the secret of Soto Zen is just two words, Not always so. Oops, he wrote. 3 words in English. In Japanese, 2 words. Not always so. This is the secret of the teaching. Aren't you glad you came tonight? You've now heard the secret teaching of the Soto Zen. Not always so. Without, he continues, without being caught by words or rules, without too many preconceived ideas, we may actually do something. And doing something, we apply our teaching. To stick to something rigidly is laziness. And I would add, is misery itself. Let me give an example. Here's how I created misery for myself. Many years ago, I participated in a session with Jan Chosen Bays, a teacher in Oregon, Zen teacher in Oregon. It was held at that time in a converted metal barn. And it was in the middle summer, it was blazingly hot. But that was okay because I could take some pleasure at being a kind of macho Zen student dripping in sweat in his effort to get awakened. But next to me was a thin woman who had allergies. For the first day, she just sniffed a lot. But by the end of the second day, her allergies got worse. And she started to snort back the phlegm and swallow. So it was like that. Again and again. For the next 4 days, and I don't think I'm exaggerating here, every 6 to 11 minutes, she snorted and swallowed. She sat right beside me. I lasted until about the middle of the third day. It's so much for the macho Zen guy sweating his way to awakening, right? And then I spoke to the teacher, to Chosen, about it in Dokusan. And Chosen just smiled and said to enjoy the spaces in between the snorting and swallowing. So during that hot session, I came to experience and understand for myself how sensations, the snorting, give rise to feelings, annoyance, even anger, which leads to thought, I resent this, and making plans, like who should I talk to get her some decongestant, some allergy medication. Of course, I did neither of those things. I could see clearly, certainly by the fourth, fifth day, that I was caught. And there was nothing to do but sit through the conditions that were present. Now, at the end of that session, that retreat, I didn't go up to this woman who sat beside me and thank her for the wonderful learning experience. Although I wish I had. But I did see that she was not to blame. I did see I had created my own misery. Back to the poem. Without distinguishing the winds from east, west, south, or north, together expressing the wisdom equally to all beings. Dogen adds a comment about wisdom, or prajna, as it's referred to as well, after the poem. Dogen wrote this. This is the true sounding of prajna, or wisdom, through Buddhas and ancestors. Prajna is the whole body. Prajna is the whole body of others, the whole body of self. Prajna is the whole of east, west, south, north. Is snorting prajna? Dogen tells us, using Ruijing's poem, that there is no separation. You do not stand in any way outside this universe. Prajna wisdom becomes clear when we are free from habitual, conceptual, and discriminative ways of thinking. It is not that those are bad or that we should avoid them. They do have a very important place in our lives. But there is more. There is much more. Prajna wisdom, like love, highlights for us the intimacy of all things. And when we clearly see that, our view of the world is changed. How do you express the sound of prajna, of wisdom? Ruijing in this poem tells us that the emptiness or the boundlessness of our very being, struck by the winds of life, that expresses prajna. That expresses the wisdom. And if we cling to the idea, my way of looking at things, my judgment, then perhaps the bell is muffled, no longer hanging free in empty space. And then in the very last line of the poem, Ruijing does something wonderful. He shows us prajna. Ding, ding, dong. Ding, ding, dong. He gives us sound that we cannot grasp because it is sound without meaning. Bird song, ocean waves, the bells in the zendo, the cars speeding by, all expounding dharma. Listening to the sounds of the world is like sitting zazen, staring at the wall. Because the wall has no special meaning, and yet we gaze at it with a spaciousness, and a kind of bare curiosity, being with our life as it is. So untroubled by expectations or judgments, untroubled perhaps by moments of lust, sorrow, humor, anger, just breathing in and breathing out each moment fresh, not needing a story to connect to the past or the future. It's just enough. In your life, the four winds, east, west, south, north, will always blow. And just as you have no control over the winds that blow outside your door, you have no control over the winds that will blow your life. But that's okay. Resting in spaciousness, in boundlessness. Those winds will call forth prajna, the great wisdom that is already and has always been part of you, maybe the whole of you. And so in our practice, to help us, guide us, we sit facing the wall, allowing the mind to clear, the heart to settle. And we allow those winds to be, we allow ourselves to simply experience the winds as they blow. And they will sound. And what sounds will you bring forth into this world. Okay, I think I'm going to stop here. Thank you so much for your attention. Greatly appreciated. And again, I'd like us to get into, I'll put you into small groups as we usually do, and I'll give you a couple of questions to talk to each other about. So I was puzzling about this, and here are the two questions for you to think about for a moment. During these trying times, what sounds bring you comfort and equanimity? And how do you cultivate and honor those? During these troubling times, what sounds bring you comfort and equanimity? And how do you cultivate or do you honor those sounds? The second question, what wind is blowing on you now? And what sound are you offering the world? Maybe those are a little bit abstract or too poetic to grasp, but give it your best shot. Or talk about something else that you've heard in what I've just spoken about. And that'd be fine too. Okay, so I think everyone here has been through the drill a number of times. So I'll put you into groups. And I may manipulate the groups a little bit because I see where I have two groups with two people in them, which is fine. I'll just try to manipulate a little bit once I get you into groups. So each person will get 3 minutes. And again, just speak about your own experience from the heart. And I'll, after 9 minutes or 10 minutes, I'll bring us all back into the big room here.